Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Thank goodness it's folk. Sheffield Live's weekly folk programme, broadcasting to the world. With Sam Hindley and James Fagan. Every Friday at 10 a.m.
Welcome back to the second half of Thank Goodness It's Folk, and our special guest today for this programme is the author, musician and broadcaster, Ian A. Anderson, and we continue our conversation with him now with some more brilliant music as chosen by and contributed to by Ian Anderson. Ian, two festivals that you were very much involved with early on, just before I started coming to the UK as an adult anyway. I arrived here in 95, but the Maltings, the Farnham Folk Day was legendary and went for, I think, 5 or 6 years.
It was most of the 80s.
I guess the legacy or the ghosts or whatever you want to call it of that time around that area are still very strong, and Lawrence Heath is still involved. I think he may have retired from running the club now, but he's a figure still, isn't he?
Lawrence has been retiring for the last 20 years. Nobody believes him anymore. Every time he says, "I'm not running barn dances anymore." Oh, really, Lawrence?
There was a hotbed, though, wasn't it, Farnham, and that area generally, and Bracknell, then your involvement in the festival there, which at one point you would have to say it was probably the most important kind of diverse music festival in the country, really.
Well, it probably was. I wasn't aware of it at the time. I mean, it was just that... one of the things with the magazine, which was, you know, in full bloom by then, was that, you know, we all got to hear a lot of music. And the whole... Yeah. The thing with the magazine was to turn people onto that music. But, you know, the one thing's better than writing about music is letting people hear it. And so if those artists are around... And we did strike lucky, because by then I knew the legendary Lucy Duran, who's the sort of saint of West African and Cuban music and what have you. And she was able to broker us a few guest artists who were just brilliant.
You know. Well, you had some astonishingly good artists over the years at Bracknell. I did end up going there once with Epona, who you will remember, when Nancy was playing with them. And I did go to Bracknell, and it was still at the stately home, I seem to remember. But that would have been in the late 90s I went.
Yeah.
So moving on, Ian, Tiger Moth. Now, apart from anything else, how lucky were you to have that artwork? The cover of the Tiger Moth albums, they are some of the best album covers in English folk. Tell us about the band and how much fun it must have been, because you do talk glowingly about Tiger Moth and the days of the band in your book.
Yeah, I think, if I have to nominate the most fun I had playing, it would be in Tiger Moth, because, you know, we went from, in a period of a few years, from doing folk clubs where you have to entertain people with song introductions, and therefore I tended to be the front man doing that, and it was 2 half-hours to people sat in rows, to playing for 4 hours to people dancing, where the music you're playing goes directly through their brains into their feet, and you don't have to talk bollocks to them in between to say what each tune is and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, great times, and a kind of a golden period. But I do think I think Kayleys are alive and well again, and I think that it's a very exciting time to be playing Kayleys again on the scene. You've probably noticed it yourself over the last couple of years.
Yeah, they certainly seem to be hanging on. They may well be picking up. But the nice thing about Tiger Moth was certainly at that time, the standard sort of Kayley band thing was you'd play medleys of tunes. Because if you're playing, the theory being you're playing for 10 minutes for a dance to work its way through before people fall over. And therefore you've got to play a bunch of different tunes to make it interesting. Well, what we decided we'd stick with one tune and just improvise the arse off of it. And there was this sort of saying, you know, the last one playing the tune's a sissy. But it was incredibly invigorating. It really helped having John Maxwell as the drummer because he was... You know, he'd just go into outer space. But as long as you kept playing the right tempo and it was whatever was needed, like a 48-bar polka, and there was some semblance of the shape of a tune, people just used to really love it.
Well, let's have a listen to some Tiger Moth right now. And I'd like to reflect a bit on something that took up such a large part of your life, and it, in some ways, consumed you for a while. And I think you've spoken very honestly in your book about some of the personal impact and the toll. But by and large, I think the reflection is that running the F Roots magazine was incredibly important to you, and you did it because you're never going to make a fortune from it, but you did it because you do what you can, as you said, and we do what we can with what we've got. And it was your way of trying to keep people informed in the variety of music that you knew they would like, that just they didn't necessarily know about it or how to get hold of it. But it did become, it became all consuming in some ways, didn't it, for you?
Well, it did. I mean, there was a long period when it was like 100-hour working weeks and not being able to pay myself very much, so you know, times did get tough. But you know, the reward was like, you know, every few days something would turn up in the post and you go, what's that? You know,
which tied in with your long-standing passion for new music and for discovery.
You liked the people who kind of got it, which was that you were doing it for the music, for the scene in general, and you weren't doing what some people would have preferred, which was basically writing stuff for their press kit to make them famous. You know, I have many great friends to this day who were on the appreciating what it was all about side, and there's a lot of people I don't speak to anymore because they were the pushy ones who just wanted to be famous.
Of course. And Ian, you when you started it, and you and Lawrence, and there was a third person as a co-founder, wasn't there?
Caroline Morker, yeah.
That's right. There was always, in the early days, and something that continued right through, was there was a sense of irreverence. There was a sense that when you picked up the magazine, you weren't just going to get a very serious analysis of everything. And from some of the cartoons to some of the editorials, and later on some of the other writers who brought in, you did try and encourage a degree of not taking everything too seriously. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I think levity was our middle name.
And you weren't afraid of ruffling feathers, were you? I mean, I remember famously Mike Scott, the one who always had to say he was not the Water Boys, but the Bristol songwriter. I don't know if you ever heard his song, I'm sure you did, called I Got the Horizontal Finger in Folk Roots.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Oh, I'll have to dig it out for you. It's a brilliant parody. And it is basically the lament of an artist who goes to the trouble of making a CD, sends it off to what was then Folk Roots, ends up in the And the Rest column, and ends up with the dreaded horizontal finger. The song is brilliant, and I'm surprised that you've never heard it. And if I had it to play on the show today, I would.
Just a I got the horizontal finger in the roots. I got the horizontal finger in the roots. Not a smile, not a frown, no thumbs up or no thumbs down. I got the horizontal finger in the roots.
But how did you, or do you think you did manage to avoid becoming gatekeepers yourselves? Because it was something that you were adamant not to, to be. Do you think anyone who runs a magazine for as long as you, and clearly has some influence, although it was before so-called influencers and social media, do you think you managed to avoid gatekeeping?
I would hope so. I mean, I always felt that what we were doing was holding the door wide open and saying, come in, you're welcome.
But some gatekeeping is not overt. It's more to do with just selection, isn't it? And I guess any editor has that.
There was a point when, I think, it just when it got into the 90s, there is this thing that, due to the music business on the other side of the Atlantic, in that country we no longer mention, that folk is blokes with guitars who write their own songs.
Yeah.
And then a bit later they allowed in a few women with guitars who wrote their own songs. But that's supposedly folk. And that was less and less central to what we did, because we were discovering, that's a horrible word, we were finding out about stuff from all over the world, which was brilliant music, even if some of it was in languages that we didn't understand. Why would you want to just concentrate on this one small, never-changing aspect of it? Because certainly in the 1990s, people were still writing the songs that they were writing in the 1960s.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very, very easy. I mean, there's a well-known artist who's still around the folk scene these days, who, I get blamed for everything. We had a reviews editor who would decide whether a particular record was relevant to the remit of the magazine. And she told the publicist, really sorry, but actually this doesn't really fall in our remit, and it's actually not that great either. And, you know, I have an enemy to this day, because this person went all over the social media of the...
I suppose, you know, if it's only a few enemies out of 40 years of editing, you haven't done too badly there, really.
But the thing was, one of the reasons we changed the title the second time from Folk Roots to F Roots, which seemed like a very good idea at the time. You know, people can say iMac, why can't they say F Roots? Basically, the remit was anything from anywhere with its roots in a tradition, which could be people writing songs that related to the tradition, or it could be, you know, the most ethnic field recordings you could imagine, and all points in between. But what it wasn't was an acoustic adjunct of pop music.
Sure. There are two things I'd like to explore quickly with you, Ian. One of them is you've had some brilliant writers over the years, and you had some great support, including from one of my dear friends, Steve Hunt, who wrote for you and also was the review editor for a while. But I think one writer, if you look at the history of the magazine, stands out for me above all others, and that's Colin Irwin. And I wonder if you could reflect just a little bit on how important Colin was in music journalism generally in Britain.
Well, I knew Colin from the moment that he... Actually, I might have even met him before that, but I knew him from the moment he started writing for Melody Maker, which was about 1974, I imagine.
Yeah.
And so he was a good friend, socially, and not long after we started the magazine, the Melody Maker dropped his folk page that he was the editor of, and he was still a staff writer and quite an important one. You know, he'd be sent off to New York to interview rock stars, but he wasn't allowed to write about folk music. So I said to him, would you like to write for us? Yes, please. And Colin was most importantly an enthusiast, and he got that across in his writing. The other thing that he got across was, if you read an interview with Martin Carthy, the way he wrote it up on the page with some words in capital letters was you could hear Martin speaking. He was just so good at it. And then the body of knowledge that he'd accumulated over all the years that he was writing about folk music, which must have been 45 years, something like that. You know, he was irreplaceable, and he's so greatly missed. But importantly, he was such a lovely bloke.
Yeah, indeed, and so supportive of so many. But also, like you said, he had a deep knowledge himself. And I think it was it Maggie Barry he started to look at the music of in quite detail towards the end of his life. He produced a show about it, didn't he?
He did a what you might call a musical. No, but what he wrote a book, and unfortunately, at some point he was passing through an airport in Scandinavia, and he had his laptop with him, and his laptop got nicked, and the silly blighter had got it backed up on a memory stick, and the memory stick was in the bag with the with the laptop, so he lost the whole thing. Oh, which goodness. Is such a tragedy. I don't think he really recovered from that. He didn't. He couldn't bring himself to start it up again. But he did the show.
Well, he is missed, as you say. He's missed greatly. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about in terms of losses, premature deaths, were Joe Strummer and John Peel, both of whom were incredibly important to you, and both who left too soon.
Yeah, it's a bad time at the moment for the old Reaper's been busy. I mean, two of my central people in the book passed away within the last month that I was writing it. And it's like, do I go back and rewrite that? No, I just say it at the end that it happened.
Yes, and I did. I wanted to express my sorrow and condolences about the passing of Elizabeth Kendall, because I actually only learnt that when I read the end of your book. So sorry about the loss of your good friend. And, of course, Spider John Kerner dying around the same time. Ian, lots and lots happened. You got back on the road. You also made lots more music with Ben Mandelson, your good friend and colleague in many of the bands, including False Beards. And you had some reformations. You had some fantastic celebration one-off concerts, which went incredibly well, both to celebrate things like the 50th anniversary of the Troubadour in Bristol, including getting a blue plaque on the side of the building, which is huge for everybody involved. I wanted to also get you to talk briefly about Sidmouth Cellar Full of Folkadelia, because I think that this is something you took great care over, but also represented something that you didn't see enough of at festivals. How do you think that's going now?
Well, I've not been able to go to Sidmouth since 2019, though I am going this year. They very kindly booked me this year. And then me and John Wilkes are going to be talking about our respective books there as well. No, I just, my driving thing for putting on concerts and all sorts of productions was to do things that other people were either not doing very well or mostly weren't doing at all. And so I was lucky on a few occasions to be able to secure some sort of background funding for things. We did a wonderful thing at the on the South Bank in London called Bridges, which was, I put together six pairings of artists who basically, apart from Catherine Finch and Sekou Keita, had never played together before, and it was brilliant. It was sold out, and you'd think the thing that always annoys me is you do this, they're a big success critically in terms of audience enjoyment, and you think other people are going to pick this up and do this and run with it and encourage some of those pairings of artists. And they never do. It's just, you know, people sit there with beans in their ears. But the Cellar Full of Folkadelia at Sidmouth came about when, you know, Alan Behrman, who was busily programming Sidmouth for many years, he knew what I did. He liked what I did with these concerts that we put on. We always tried to do something different. And he was aware that we were always trying to give a leg up to new artists who probably weren't going to get booked at a lot of festivals, if any. And he kind of knew that I sort of had my finger on the pulse. And he said, look, we've got this new venue come on stream at Sidmouth called Kennaway House. And the cellar down there holds about 100 people. We've got it every afternoon. Would you like to programme five afternoons of double bills? Mainly people who've not been booked for the festival before, or a few old timers who haven't played for a long time and people would be really pleased to see again. And so we did it, and it just went off like crazy. And I mean, you know, people who are really famous now, like Lancome and so on, did early spots down there.
Absolutely. Those concerts are the stuff of legend, and they still use the venue, I believe. And my colleague, Sam Hindley, who will be very interested to hear this conversation when I play it back to him, he loves that venue, and it's his favourite one at the festival for sure, and he's involved now as well in emceeing. Ian, I really would urge people to get hold of your book. It's a fantastic memoir, not just of your life in music, but of a scene. And I think for people who may be new to England in any way, who might not know about the music scene as it developed through the 60s and 70s, it's a pretty good summary of the whole folk scene at the time then, or the folk movement, depending on what you want to call it, or the folk industry. To quote Steve Hunt, you can tell somebody's attitude from where their word. He may be, is it a scene, a movement, or an industry?
I use the old-fashioned 1950s, 60s beatnik term, the scene, man. The point of doing the book wasn't to tell my story and big myself up for all the things I've done. It was to use what I've done as a connecting thread to lots of areas of unpopular music, as you might call it, in this country that are not documented. I mean, a few things, you know, the early folk club scene has been documented a bit, but it tends to be very much from, one particular direction. But the whole, you know, the blues scene in the 60s, the folk club scene right the way through, the growth of the clubs, the growth of festivals, world music coming on stream in the 80s, and so on and so on. And the other stuff that was going on around it in terms of, like, well, even like, you know, in the first years of this century, things like iTunes coming up and MySpace and Bandcamp, and how all these things interplay with each other.
Absolutely. Well, Ian, I'd like to wind up our section of this program with another band that I didn't know terribly much about. I never saw them, but Nancy remembers Tarika when they're Tarika Sammy, and she remembers Tarika as well. A hugely significant episode in your life where you discovered music of Madagascar and you developed strong family connections there. Your stepdaughter, Kathia, she's still in the UK, I believe.
Yeah, she's just about this month to celebrate 30 years of living in the UK.
That's fantastic. Well, that's another very moving section, and I know that you didn't write it to be about yourself, but the stuff that you reveal about your relationship with her mom and your relationship with Madagascar and the ins and outs of that, the personal stuff that you went through to support Tarika, the difficulty of touring with them, ultimately a ruinous US tour, not helped by September the 11th, and that section of the book is very interesting as well. But I want you to just to introduce that as the last bit of music we're going to hear. But before I do, my last question arising from the book is one of your conclusions in the very last part of the book I found really fascinating, and it's something I've articulated in different ways myself, which is that what is a source singer, and why are we so insistent, some people still, on saying that you have to be before a certain date to be regarded as an important source? I wonder if you could just expand on that and where you think we are now on the folk scene in England.
Well, I think the folk scene has been stuck in the same gear forever, as far as I remember. But many times over the years in Efroots, you'd have wonderful people like Martin Carthy and Shirley Collins and Rod Stradling say, you shouldn't be listening to me, you should be listening to the old boys or girls who we got our music from, because they're real, proper, traditional singers and musicians, which is true, but, you know, they were individuals. They picked up their stuff and moulded it in their own way and reworked it to suit them. Martin is 84 this year. Rod, I think, is around about 80. Shirley's in her late 80s. They have this whole lifetime of experience, and they have become, to me, as important in their own way. And there is nothing wrong with them being the source and inspiration for young singers and musicians today. I mean, obviously you should listen to more than just them, but, you know, what they should stop fighting against it, I think is the point.
I agree with you 100%, and I found it a very uplifting way to end the book, and quite a progressive way to think about what happens if we do have a planet, as you said, to go forward in the role of traditional music in the future. I think that was a really nice way to end it. It's been really lovely to chat to you, Ian, and thank you. And I wish you all the very best with the book. I hope you sell lots and lots of copies. It's called Alien Water, Six Decades Paddling in Unpopular Music by Ian A. Anderson. The A is crucial. And it's available from your website, Ian, ghostsfromthebasement.com, and from Bandcamp. What's the best way for people to... way for people to get it?
I like people to get it from the Ghost from the Basement shop on Bandcamp because I make more money out of it. But you can get it through Amazon. Theoretically, you could order it through Waterstones and places like that. But, you know, support direct thing with artists and musicians. That's what Bandcamp is for.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with it all. And there are so many tracks I could have picked to choose your broad and wide interest over the years in music from the huge continent of Africa. But the most personal connection, I suppose, became the music of Madagascar and Tarika. So perhaps you could introduce this band for us.
Yeah, this is one of their kind of live stompers, thing called Retinue. It's an album they made of exploring the sort of dance styles of Madagascar, a lot of which would be played these days on electric instruments, but they put a lot of it back onto acoustic instruments, but made it sound very modern at the same time.
It's been great having you on the show. All the best, Ian. Thanks for your time today.
It's a pleasure.
Amuretane, amuretane, amuretane. as I rolled out of a bright May morning, calm and clear was the weather. A chance to roam some miles from home among the beautiful blooming heather, and it's heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. A chance to roam some miles from home among the beautiful blooming heather, and it's heather on the moor. As I roved along with me hunting song and me heart as light as any feather, I met a pretty maid upon the way. She was tripping the dew down from the heather, and there's heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. I met a pretty maid upon the way. She was tripping the dew down from the heather, and there's heather on the moor. Where are you going to me, pretty fair maid? By hill or dale, come tell me whether. Right modestly she answered me, to the feeling of my lands together, and there's heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. Right modestly she answered me, to the feeling of my lands together, and there's heather on the moor. We both shook hands and down we sat, for it being the finest day in summer. And we sat till the red setting beams of the sun came sparkling down among the heather, and it's heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. We sat till the red setting beams of the sun came sparkling down among the heather, and it's heather on the moor. Says I must away, for me sheep and lambs have strayed from other. But I am alone to part from me, you as those fond lambs are to part their mother, and it's heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. And I am alone to part from you as those fond lambs are to part their mother, and it's heather on the moor. She rose and away she goes, and her place and name I know not either. But if I was king, I'd make her queen, the last I met among the heather, and the heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. If I was king, I'd make her queen, the last I met among the heather, and the heather on the moor.
Well, good morning, everyone, and I've got I hope you're all okay, and I've got some music to round off the second hour for you.
Good morning, Sam. It's lovely to have you here. And sorry we couldn't involve you in the Ian Anderson interview, but we've both been very busy, haven't we?
Indeed, we have, James. It's been a very busy week, full of thick stuff, I have to say, one great thing that happened last week was that I got the chance to see Paul Brady and buy a copy of his archive set, which I know you received from your parents, and that was a track from it, and I've chosen it because it was a track recorded at Vicar Street by Andy Irvine, Paul Brady, Don Lonnie and Kevin Burke, who we did see a couple of years ago, and they kicked off with that song then, and they kicked off their concert with it there, and that was Heather Down the Moor from Andy Irvine and Paul Brady, their 40th anniversary concert. And that's from Paul Brady's box set archive. And now we're going to have something by the Gigs Van a Big Band and their new album Turnstone. And this is Silver Dagger.
Thank you. was bending low, working in them cotton fields as hard as he can go. He piled it in the rail pen until the merchant came, that he might attach his cotton, that he should pay his claim. And it's pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. It's pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. I saw him in the evening, his back was against a tree, his poor old head was aching, low down on his knee. I'll be compelled to leave here, or surely I shall die. My head's commenced to aching, I heard the farmer cry. Pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. I toiled hard all my lifetime, still I find I'm poor. Without an education, my children's left my door. And it's biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Pans of biscuits, bowls of gravy, pans of biscuits we shall have. Pans of biscuits,
Magpie Art there with Pans of Biscuits, lead vocals by Martin Simpson. Magpie Art are going on tour very, very soon, and it will be Martin's last tour. So do go and see them. It'll be the last time you'll see them in this lineup. I'm gutted that I'm gutted for that reason that I'll be on. Be on holiday, so I won't get a chance to see any of these gigs. But I've seen them plenty of times, and we'll look forward to seeing them in the new lineup again.
Indeed, we will, Sam, and they will come back just as strong. I know the last gigs they did were with Sam Carter, and apparently were absolutely fantastic. But like Sam said, it will be Martin Simpson's last tour with the band. So let's hope every one of these Magpie Art concerts sells out. Get your tickets, get them early, and go along and support this great band.
Indeed. Now we have a new single. From the brand new album by Christina Olden and Alex Patterson, and this is a lovely little song called Our House.
When Friday night comes, it can't come too soon. Remember your drum and guitar. We'll play in the kitchen, even though there's no room. You stay at the table, I'll bring the tea to you. Is it our house or yours? What time shall we meet? Are you bringing the kids? I haven't played all week. Is it our house or yours? What time shall we meet? Are you bringing the kids? I haven't played. Has those missing on Fridays. Don't worry about the neighbor, 'cause she'll never hear. She's always upstairs watching the telly. Is it our house or yours? What time shall we meet? Here bringing the kids I haven't played all week. Is it our house or yours? What time shall we meet?
From there to Waterloo, and a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. I got breakfast off the embankment, and that was my lunch and tea, and only the finest cardboard made a home that was fit for me, and a begging I will go. On the stair at Leicester Square from 7 o'clock till 10, then round to the back of the Connaught Towers to dinner from out of the bin, and a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. There were three young fellas jumped out of the rubbish, they'd clipboards all aflutter. Poverty has it pluses, you know, you could present it better. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. For we're poverty PLC, we are, and we'd have you all to know. Everyone says that our share of the market will grow and grow, and a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. For we've got funds, we've got plans, we've got time in hand. We're launching a drive for the marketplace to take begging to all the land, and a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. Oh, they dressed us in all of their merchandise. I had a logo all over my hat. It read poverty rising above the time, but everyone saw it said Pratt. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. When I am tired and I heed no master's bell, a man'd be daft to be a king. Now beggars can live so well, and a begging I will go, and a begging I will go. I'm a great Victorian value, I'm enterprise poverty, completely invisible to the state and there for all to see. And a begging I will go, and a begging I will go.
Martin Carty there with A Begging I Will Go from his new album Transform Me Then Into a Fish. And that will be released on Martin's 84th birthday, the 21st of May. And I'm delighted to say that Martin is doing a gig in Whitby with Eliza and Sheila Mukherjee to launch the album on Thursday, the 12th of June. It will be at the Chapel on the Hill in Whitby, and it will also be available to watch on a live to your living room. So that will be a great night. We're coming towards the end of the show now, aren't we, James?
We are, Sam. I'm glad that we got to do some of the show together. And I'm also very, very grateful to Ian A. Anderson for coming on. If you missed the first half of the show, you can hear it all again on Mixcloud. And Ian talked to us about his 60 years in the music industry and the book that he's written about it. And I would urge you to listen back to the show, and I'd also urge you to pick up a copy of the book. I think Ian would be very grateful if you did so. I thought the mixture of music that he covered in his life and in the book and that we looked at in the show today was most interesting indeed, and we wish him well with the book. Sam, you're away. You've got a holiday coming up for a couple of weeks, so I'll be covering the show for the next few weeks. We'll miss you. Where are you off to?
I'm off to my regular relax in the sun holiday in Tenerife.
Good on you.
It's one of the only holidays I do that's not music involved. It's just relax by the pool.
Well, you enjoy yourself, Sam, and we'll be thinking of you, and we look forward to you returning at the end of April. But in the meantime, what have you got to finish the show?
Let's finish the show with a tune that features you, Mr. Fagan. And this is Nancy Kerr, James, and Tim Van Eyckham with The Wire Vendor. And just a reminder that Nancy, James, and Tim will be performing as a trio at St Andrew's Church on Salter Lane on the second of May, and we're really looking forward to that. There's still tickets left, but please do come and join us. It will be a great night, and we look forward to it. This is Nancy Kerr, James Fagan, and Tim Van Eyckham with The Wire Vendor, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Look after one another, folks,
and I'll see you next week.